Save big money at Menards, where there's no ceiling to savings. Update your space with new ceiling tiles. Menards carries stylish and durable ceiling tile options. Armstrong ceiling tiles offer a variety of styles that are easy to install. Get the Brighton 2x2 ceiling tile for only $379 each. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Your small business is booming, you might say,
cha-ching,
but you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help your growing business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You do have to make that step up. Like, when you look at the model kind of Rovers we're using, it's that kind of Rosenberg model. You go and dominate the league for 8-9 years and then you can progress in Europe.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball
with William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, welcome along to Who You Got, where we try to pick, with varying degrees of success and failure, the weekend's Premier League fixtures. Joined by Kathleen and Will today. It's a skeleton post-Christmas crew, but dare I say, it's a bit A-teamy, because we're going to look at the results over Christmas. Our last round, it was before the Christmas before, we skipped the week. Have we got the results handy from the last day? And there you see Kathleen, top of the table. She got a correct score. Your second week in a row with a correct score, Kathleen, which has boosted you up the table. Me in second place there in the week, and Will in third place, both with three correct. And give us the overall table there. And you'll see Kathleen has jumped up to mid-table with a very, very good Christmas period. Good festive period. She's kind of the Crystal Palace of this division. Will, very much to Liverpool, out on top, 46 points. Steady Christmas, I would say. Kind of maintained your lead. And me, very much the Arsenal? Nottingham Forest. Jumping up the table into 43 points, just three behind you and holding off John and Nathan, who have been kind of knocking around there on the same. I think they've both been on the same score for about 5-6 weeks now.
There's something beautifully 1979 about the current Premier League table when you look at Liverpool, Arsenal, Nottingham Forest as the top three.
Yeah.
We've been transported back. There was a lot of 1979s, I think, over the Christmas weekend. Fulham beat Chelsea for the first time since that year as well, away from home. And just kind of a bizarre Christmas. I'm glad we didn't have Who You Got around the New Year's fixtures, because some of them were a bit wonky. And I think we would have really poor scores if we did last week.
See, that's the voice of a front runner who doesn't want the kind of the wacky weeks to come in, because he doesn't feel like he can, you know, the less weeks the better, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the New Year's fixtures. We would have said Arsenal beat Brentford, most likely. Ipswich, Chelsea is probably the one that no one would have got.
All over the place on that.
Yeah.
Villa
likely
Brighton.
We left that one out.
A few people I'd say would have said a draw.
I'd say we
Villa
would have
Brighton.
Had 7 out of 10 draws in that one, yeah.
Newcastle United.
Would anyone have gone Newcastle to win 2-0 at Old Trafford? I know they're on a good run of form.
Well,
we'll never know.
Look, you mentioned various things since 1979 and so on. Manchester United have been a meme's best friend this week, because it's all been since 1964 and different things, since they've gone this long without, or they've been this low since, and so on and so forth. They're at Anfield this week. That's our match of the week. We're going to start with that. Let's have a look at what we picked. They also, I mentioned their scoreline, or you said, did anyone have them to nil? They haven't scored since Amad Diallo's goal in the last minute against Manchester City, yeah, which was three full Premier League games ago. Everybody here, all 10 of us, have picked Liverpool to win by some huge scores. So I can't see these because I'm far too blind and forgot my glasses. But I believe we have 3-1s, we have a 5-1, we have a 4-0, a 3-0, a 4-0, a 6-0 from Shane Hannon. There's a self-hating
really
Manchester United fan if ever there was one.
I think I've been more conservative than most on this one.
You and Phil both have 2-0.
Yeah, despite the fact that Liverpool are going to completely control this fixture, and they're not going to, like, United aren't going to lay a glove on them with the form they've shown the last four games. And their form at Anfield has been horrific over the last kind of 8-9 years in particular, but even just against Liverpool more generally. So when United got in 2022 was the only win in the last 13 where they've played against Liverpool in the league. They haven't won in their last 8 trips to Anfield, and they haven't scored in their last 4. So the idea of this being a shutout by Liverpool, I think, is a very strong possibility. And the last 2 3-0s that Liverpool got in the league at Old Trafford, which were the last 2 times the teams have met, I felt Liverpool could have scored way more, but didn't. I'm kind of half expecting that type of game where Liverpool are going to be massively on top. They'll miss some chances, but will come away at the end of Sunday afternoon and think, you know what, Liverpool just strolled to a 2 or 3 nil win there.
So Liverpool's performance against West Ham last week was a little bit of a... Like, that's kind of the first time they've done that. Mm. It's the first time they've gone out, been way the better team, taken care of business, played well from 1 to 90 and dominated and hammered the team in a while. Not all season or anything like that, but generally they've been falling behind or they've been sort of labouring through and then finishing really, really strongly. And an incredible virtue in itself, this ability to kind of make sure you can turn around the game and win them. But to see them on that kind of form they were Sunday is sort of ominous, you know. And it hasn't been an overly busy Christmas period. You think they're going to be super fresh. United, no matter how bad they get, will never be a team that people take lightly or don't expect or don't kind of bring their best game for. And it will mean so much for them to go out. And I think honestly the best hope Manchester United have in this game is the game getting postponed for the weather and meeting them later in the year.
Yeah.
I really do. Only Colum Own and Gerr have gone for them to score. They're in heavy defeats. The rest of us have all gone for United to continue this scoreless streak. And watching them against Newcastle the other night... Mm. I don't know where a goal is going to come from.
My thing with Liverpool is that it's just the variety of scorers they have, and I think that's the thing United are really going to struggle with. Obviously, you have Salah in there who's in absolutely exceptional form, so you focus on him. But then there are four or five other people who have scored consistently over the last like 6 weeks in particular, and that seems to be something Arne Slot is really focusing on, is having that variety within the team. And I just don't know how United... are going to be able to cope with that. I think this is the sort of game they're going to go in and just completely bed in. I don't think Amorim's going to try anything fancy. That's why I went for a nil result, because I don't think he's even going to be looking at scoring. Maybe something random happens and a penalty is given away or someone gets a chance, but I just really don't see where those goals are going to come from, and also what sort of style of play that Manchester United could go out and do, which would lead to any sort of score. And that without losing two or three goals as a result.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the formula for them to do it, and funny enough, we have two examples of United doing a good job against Liverpool recently, and one of them was the nil-all draw at Anfield with the random Dalot sending off the two yellow cards. But other than that, like a flawless defensive display from United. And then the other one is obviously the FA Cup game last year, which was just turned the game into utter chaos. And I just wonder if this United team, and it's not a reflect, we've had the Amorim debate loads of times, there's no point in going into it again, it's not a long-term assessment of Amorim, but it's where they currently are with playing within a structure they're uncomfortable with the personnel that they have. I don't know if either of those options are available to them successfully this weekend. Yeah. I don't know if they can close it down, because I think they look so at sea. And I think your point about the amount of options Liverpool have to score them, I think will overwhelm that defence. I can't see how that five or that seven, if you include the two midfielders, are able to cope with that amount of, with basically attacks coming from every angle on the pitch and from all sort of different levels, from all sort of different widths. And I just don't know how they can cope with it. And then likewise, if they go to try and have a bit of a shootout and just say, let's throw all tactics out the window and have a bit of a derby match and kick hard and, you know, hit them on the counter constantly, I think Liverpool mopped them up. We could all be wrong here. And as I said, there are two examples of United doing this, but I just can't see it.
Sometimes it comes to rival match as well. Logic goes out the window. We think of Celtic against Rangers yesterday, where Rangers are missing two, three of their best players against a Celtic team who've been rampant all season, and go and win 3-0. Bizarre things can happen. But to your point on the way that United set up, so United beat Manchester City by being good on the counter-attack against a team who were incredibly susceptible to being beaten in one-on-one counter-attacking positions. And it was actually the pace of Amad Diallo particularly that caused huge problems for them. I think Liverpool, despite the fact that Andy Robertson has had some, you know, rocky periods during this season, with the exception of him maybe in that area, they're really good at defending counter-attacks against themselves as well. And even compared to Klopp's teams, I think Arne Slot's Liverpool are much better at actually taking control of the ball and not putting themselves in positions where they're going to be caught one-on-one on the counter as well. So Manchester United's strongest strength could well be neutralised by the way that Liverpool have been playing as well. It's like very difficult to make an argument that Manchester United are going to Anfield and are going to rip up the script entirely and beat them on the counter-attack. It's very, very difficult to see it. And just to the Mo Salah point as well, his record against Man United is absolutely incredible. So he's the top scorer against them in Premier League history. He's got 12 goals against them. If you look at his numbers this season, they're absolutely sick. 17 goals and 13 assists he has so far. They're Thierry Henry 2003-2004 numbers. And he's doing so while also having a supporting cast around him, as Kathleen said, who were well able to chip in, especially Luis Diaz this season. So it's a scary enough prospect for United, I think. I can understand why Shane Hannon has gone for 6-0. I don't think he's doing that just to be different to everyone else. There is that possibility that if Liverpool open them up and United concede a couple of goals early, this could get messy.
I also think the interesting thing about Salah this season is because of the way Arne Slot has set up his team, it's allowing Salah, well, he doesn't have the legs to run as much as fit as he is. He doesn't have the legs to run as much as he used to, but he's also playing in that higher position. And as a result, he's getting the majority of his goals are coming in the second half, because he actually then has the fitness of, compared to all the defenders around him that have been trying to keep track of him for the first like 60 odd minutes to make sure he doesn't get the goals. And then he's just whipping them in one after the other. It's so impressive what he's doing this season and what he is on track to do. Like, it's going to be a record-breaking season for him if he doesn't get injured and keeps up what his, like, XG is at the moment.
I've come around to the way of thinking. I think he's the best player in Premier League history now at this stage. I think Cristiano Ronaldo's best years were outside of the Premier League. I think Cristiano Ronaldo is the best player who has played in the Premier League.
I think it's a very definitive statement.
Yeah, but ESPN,
he's one of. He's one of, yeah.
ESPN did a really good piece about this during the week, comparing Ronaldo and Messi at various different ages and whether certain players were better than them or not at that age. And at the age of 32, Salah was better than both.
If your small business is booming, you might say, cha-ching, but you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help your growing business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Save big money at Menards, where there is no ceiling to savings. Update your space with new ceiling tiles. Menards carries stylish and durable ceiling tile options. Armstrong ceiling tiles offer a variety of styles that are easy to install. Get the Brighton 2x2 ceiling tile for only $379 each. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
My uncontrollable movements called TD, tardive dyskinesia, felt embarrassing. I felt like disconnecting. I asked my doctor about treating my TD and learned about Ingrezza, a prescription medicine clinically proven for reducing TD in adults. That's always one capsule, once daily, and number one prescribed. People taking Ingrezza can stay on most mental health meds.
Ingrezza can cause depression, suicidal thoughts, or actions in patients with Huntington's disease. Call your doctor if you become depressed, have sudden behavior or mood changes, or suicidal thoughts. Don't take Ingrezza if allergic. Serious side effects may include allergic reactions like sudden, potentially fatal swelling and hives, sleepiness, the most common side effect, and heart rhythm problems. Know how Ingrezza affects you before operating a car or dangerous machinery. Report fever, stiff muscles, or problems thinking, as these might be life-threatening. Shaking, stiffness, drooling, and trouble with moving or balance may occur.
Take control by asking your doctor about Ingrezza.
Learn more at Ingrezza.com. That's Ingrezza.com. Ingrezza.
This spring, follow what feels right. Like coasting the day away on white sand beaches, making new friends with playful dolphins, taking time for each other in a relaxing place. It just feels right to take a break in Fort Myers. Book a direct flight from your city to Southwest Florida International Airport. Plan your trip to the islands, beaches, and neighborhoods of Fort Myers at visitfortmyers.com.
This is it. The idea that Salah isn't playing his best football, and I think I kind of want to talk about the contract thing, because we're still in this mindset, I think, that, you know, someone hits 30. I remember, like, with the big four in the tennis, and obviously Andy Murray's body broke down, but the other three kind of kept going longer. There was this assumption that because the generation before and the generation before that were finished at 28, 29, then they necessarily had to be. And I always think it's like, evolution is something that happens over hundreds of years, right? It's not something that happens in a generation. But dietary and training and all of that, like, literally kind of was invented from the clear blue sky, you know, in the early 2000s almost, in terms of, like, versus what they did before versus what they do now. The idea that we have to measure when somebody's body is shutting down versus what it was 20, 30 years ago is ludicrous, you know? And it's like, you see it in Messi and Ronaldo, and now I think it's even kicking on again. Like, Salah is one of the fittest players in Premier League history. He's never really had any kind of a serious long-term injuries. He's had a couple of bone breaks, all right, but like no mad muscle problems or anything like that. It makes perfect sense that he should still be at his best at 32.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make any sense that he isn't. And this is the contract thing that I keep talking about, right? It's like there's no sign. It would take a weird decline for him not to be again as good this year in terms of fitness, right? You know, form is whatever it is, you know? Yeah. So say you give him a two-year contract at a raise, say he goes up to 500 grand, and I don't see why, there's this assumption, by the way, that he should be on the same wage because he's getting older. It's like, who else can continue signs new contracts in like this for the same wage as opposed to going up, right? So he goes up, that costs, I think we worked it out as something like 25 million, something like that a year for Liverpool. They are, maybe it's more than that. Sorry, maybe I have the maths all wrong, but I think it's around that. I think it's about 25 million a year for so that's 50 million commitment to Mo Salah. If they let Mo Salah go for free, they're buying someone for more money than that on equal wages who is unlikely, if not definitely, not going to have the same output over those 2 years.
Mm.
So their asset will drop off. They won't get anything for him in the 2 years, but the investment will be worth it for those 2 years. It's crazy that they won't pay him. It's people aren't thinking about this logically. They're thinking about you can't pay a guy at that age because of it's almost like an outdated mode of thinking about what the asset is worth.
Mm.
That asset is worth nothing to him if he walks out now anyway. Mm. But they invest another, it sounds like insane money, and it is in a way, but think of what the transfer fee will be for someone that they pay. And if they buy someone for 100 million, lads, they're paying him 500 grand a week. They're not paying him 100 grand and saving over the long term on what Salah's getting. You know what I mean? So it's like, I really don't think that you get what you can out of this guy. He is one of the best players in your club's history. You said he's the best player in the league's history. I'd say he's one of the best, and he is going to win you the league this season. Mm. And he's playing better than he ever has.
Oh, I absolutely think Liverpool should pay him. I think it's ridiculous that they haven't already got this sewn up and done.
Now, unless he's looking for something absolutely bananas, but I think he's looking to probably move from 350 to 500, and he's looking for 2 years instead of one.
Yeah.
So it's that'd be my
it's the last big paycheck. Like, I can understand why people would be concerned that there is a long history of players dropping off in their mid-30s where their form can go entirely downhill, and then you end up with a player who you have an albatross around your neck of paying them a huge amount of money while you're not going to be able to shift them for any money because of their age. But I think given that everything that Mo Salah has done for Liverpool as well, he has earned this deal.
Yeah.
And the way he's playing at the moment, if you were looking
at the
purchase...
But he continues to earn it though. That's the problem. Yeah. There's that people will look at that and say you have to be the successful clubs are coldest. And, you know, like if somebody's time is up, then they cut bait, you know, and that's fine. They dropped Wijnaldum and everybody thought it was a mistake, and he has done nothing in football since.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That was a cold, hard move that was the right thing to do based on the data they had. I just don't see how. I don't think you can just apply it blindly to
every
situation.
Can you imagine what you'd have to pay to sign Mo Salah? If Liverpool were looking to get him in the window, it's just...
But also, none of the Liverpool hierarchy either wants to, when it comes to the summer, and if he hasn't signed a deal and they have won the title and then he goes on and wins the Ballon d'Or. Like, you don't want to be the person who was responsible for sorting that contract and then all of a sudden it's like, actually, we lost the Ballon d'Or winner and he's gone to, I don't know, wherever he decides to go on to, say he goes to Madrid or somewhere, and he continues to do what he does. You know, that would be a massive slap in the face for whoever stands over that.
I still think he stays, by the way. I think Trent Alexander-Arnold leaves and the other two stay.
Yeah. All right, well, Salah to score this week might have been one of the bets we could have looked at with William Hill and Lee Phelps for a charity bet. We're going to talk about the Spurs and Newcastle game, though, because that's where we want to do our charity bet. But Lee, how are you? Happy New Year. Hope you had a good Christmas. Everybody has gone for a heavy Liverpool win in this game. Is that what the market's looking at too?
The Spurs Newcastle game. Yeah, I think.
Before we move on to the Liverpool United game, I was just saying we were just talking about that there. All 10 of us have gone for, I think, more two goals or more. Some have gone as high as 6-0.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done a bet builder for that game, and I've gone for over 2.5 Liverpool goals in that as part of the bet builder. I mean, it's just hard to see how Manchester United can put up enough of a defence against this Liverpool side. No goals, no points in the last three. Liverpool scored 14 goals in that same period. I mean, I know this is a derby game in a sense. You know, I know it's not geographically a derby game, but it's one of the biggest games. And, yeah, form can go out the window, but I mean, you've got to have some form to be able to throw it out of the window, first of all. And Man United have got none of it, have they? So, yeah, absolutely. And the market is reflects that, really. Interestingly, Manchester United aren't as big a price as they were when they played City early in the season, when City were flying. But they're still a big old price. There's some interesting games this weekend. There's some really, I think, you know, if Liverpool get through this one with no problems, then it's hard to see where they falter, isn't it?
It's starting to look that way, yeah. Like, I mean, you're starting to do mental gymnastics to see how they get caught, even if you think, like, Arsenal or whoever, the idea of them winning every game, and then where, like, do Liverpool have to lose maybe six games if Arsenal play well for the rest of the season? It's hard to see.
It just seems really unrealistic, doesn't it? And I tend to think once you get past this period, whether you're looking at the bottom of the table or the top or wherever, the average points that a team's got by this point, it doesn't change drastically. I know there are exceptions to that rule. You know, think about relegation when West Brom got out of trouble that time. You know, there are exceptions to the rule, but generally, your points per game tends to stick to that. City are one of the teams who can... you know, go against that, and they can go on long, not just unbeaten, but long winning runs. Whether they can do that this season is highly debatable. But, you know, in the past, they've shown that they can just go on these long winning runs. Incidentally, talking about Mo Salah there, he's now odds on to win Player of the Year and also odds on to win the Golden Boot, of course, which he leads at the moment. So, yeah, and Liverpool odds on to win the title. So it looks like they've got it up. From a betting point of view right now, you know, everything's on Liverpool.
Yeah, great time to ship him out, Liverpool, and not bother paying him. We're gonna jump in next on to Spurs and Newcastle, because I think there's a lot of interest in that. It's where our charity bet is coming from. Other than that, though, do you have anything that you're looking at this weekend for us?
Well, I mean, I think there's some interesting hackers out there. I mean, I think Arsenal do win at Brighton in that game, a tea time game. I think Man City do win again, by the way, beating West Ham. I think West Ham are pretty poor. I like Villa at home to Leicester. You know, Leicester are pretty desperate. Villa pretty good at home. Maybe struggle a little bit on the road. Then in the Championship, Leeds to win at Hull. Leeds are flying at the moment. And Stoke have taken on Mark Robins. And I think there could be a bounce there at home to Plymouth, who are the bottom club, who are woeful on the road, pretty much woeful everywhere, really. So I like that as an acca. There's a few bet builders that are out there. I think the Arsenal game's really interesting for a bet builder as well. And I put one together on this Spurs-Newcastle match as well. Plenty going on. It's like that first full weekend of the new year. Some clubs will be full of hope, and some will be dreading it, won't they, after the Christmas that they've had, Man United included. Interestingly, yeah. Man United, Southampton, Leicester probably had the worst Christmases. And you think, well, those two teams are relegation threatened. You know, Manchester United need to start picking points up soon, because they could get dragged in. We've seen money for them, you know,
really,
over the Christmas period to be relegated, which, I mean, it's still a decent enough price, by the way. But, you know, there obviously is bigger prices, you know, way bigger than 33-1. There were 33-1 going into that Christmas period, and then they've just been chipped away at over the Christmas period. So, they need some points from somewhere. Don't think they're going to come at Anfield, but, you know.
Yeah, not in the next couple of weeks, I would say. But if Ipswich keeps beating top six teams, then suddenly that 7 points is going to get a bit smaller. One other team that probably didn't have the most fun Christmas was Spurs. I'm looking at 10 picks here for this game against Newcastle. And I don't know if we think they're playing Kevin Keegan's Newcastle or what's going on, but only one of the 10 that Shane has Newcastle winning 2-1 has less than 4 goals in the selection, all independently picked by 10 people. Yeah. So it's bound to be nil all, isn't it? Really, like.
It's hard to see that, though, the way Spurs play. It's very hard to see that happening. In fact, just to back up your stat, since Eddie Howe took over, in the games between these two, they've shared 33 league goals. That's almost 5 a game on average. But his team is on a run of 4 straight clean sheets, isn't it? So, you know, which is pretty unheard of for them as well. So that's the only fly in the ointment for this over 3.5. Look, it's odds on. It's 17-20. Just a touch of odds on. That means we get €18.50 back to the tenner stake. So 8.50 would go on to our total. We had 3 winners, by the way, you know, fairly recently. So we're kind of starting to tick along nicely. Still in the red, but we need a few more winners. So I can see why you're going for it. That was part of my bet builder, but I just went with over 1.5 Newcastle goals just because of that clean sheet that they've been keeping. And will Spurs score against them? Spurs have got some serious injury problems. Newcastle have as well, by the way. But I do think there'll be attempts on goal. I like, obviously, Dominic Solanke. I had got him to have at least one shot on target. Same for Alexander Isak. They've both got really good records against these clubs. Isak scored 5 against Spurs Solanke for Bournemouth scored three against Newcastle as well. So, and I also like Radu Dragushin to be booked. Andrew Postecoglou was saying that he wasn't fully fit in the game. He was forced to play him in the last game. Well, it looks like he'll play again. So if that's the case, I'd quite like him to pick up a yellow card. So those four for my bet builder are around 11-1. But yeah, let's go with the over 3.5 match goals. It's hard to see how it won't be, you know, a 3-1 or a 3-2 or something crazy like that. 17-20 the price for that, for the bet of the week.
Okay, we'll take that. Lee, thanks very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers, guys. Enjoy.
Cheers to Lee. And who you got is in association with William Hill. Remember, you must be over 18 and visit gamblingcare.ie for more info. So let's look at the picks for this game. This is 12:30 tomorrow, by the way. You know, notoriously the game of the week.
Nil-nil half time. Tune in at half time.
Like, the picks are mad. Like, this is I was talking to Lee about our pick as you guys were sending in the picks last night, and most of you were kind of like sending them in via text as opposed to on our usual thing. So you weren't seeing everybody's picks, and everybody's gone kind of mad for this. So Colm has 3-1 to Newcastle. Owen has 3-2 to Newcastle. Jer's 4-3. Jer tends to do these things, but, you know, I think it's quite a sensible one here. John has Spurs winning. John never afraid to go out on a limb. And he's gone for 2-1. Actually, there was 2-2-1s. Apologies, I got that wrong earlier. Kathleen, you've 3-2 to Newcastle. I've 3-1 to Newcastle. Nathan's gone for a draw, 2-2, one of only two results to go against Newcastle at the Tottenham Stadium, which is mad. 3-2 for Phil, 2-1 for Shane, and 3-1, like myself, Will. I've watched Newcastle twice last week. They were brilliant against Villa. It was a hard game to kind of judge because the Duran sending off just completely scuppered it. But up until that point, they'd scored a great goal. It was an even game. They always play well against Villa. They're just, you know, I don't know what it is, but Howe tends to have Emery's number. They've given us a few hammerings over the last couple of years. But just watching them in that game, and you're thinking, this is a team of high quality that's making a lot of sense at the moment. And then watching them in the first half the other night against United, like, United were terrible. Like, that's not, but we shouldn't always focus on the big team. Newcastle were brilliant. Yeah. And if you look at that shape of that team, with Gordon playing as well as he is, with Isak looking like the best striker in the league, and with Gomez and Tonali in midfield, Tonali playing a little bit deeper. You had players then that, like, good role players like Jacob Murphy or whoever. You know, you can probably build around the sort of back four and a couple of players in midfield, but generally the spine of that team is superb. And they're on an amazing run of form at the moment. And it's weird because you still see Spurs as a big team despite their form, but I actually can't see Newcastle not winning this game.
Same. I think Newcastle have been very impressive kind of both ends in the last four or five games. So yeah, the first 15 games of the season, like Lee's already mentioned, they kept four clean sheets over the last few weeks. First 15, there was a bit, felt like they were feeling their way into the season a little bit. A lot was made of the fact that they totally tailored their preparation for the season differently. And maybe that press that was there in the last couple of seasons under Eddie Howe wasn't quite as vociferous in the first kind of dozen games of the season. But as that has kind of slowly kicked into gear, and Isak's form has now kicked up.
And I actually left out a player who's so, so important to that in Joe Linton. Like, yeah, that those three in midfield together are as good a combo, I think, as there is, you know?
Yeah, and like Joe Linton also gives them an extra option if they do decide to go a little bit more direct and launch a few balls into the box as well. And we saw that in the Villa game. And then against United, they were just so composed and they were all over United, swarming them in the first half of that game. I think they've been really, really impressive the last few matches. So you're talking about two teams who've got the most contrasting of forms. Like Newcastle, really good the last four games. It's difficult to say anything overly positive about Spurs' last five, really, in all competitions, with the exception of that crazy EFL Cup game that they had against Manchester United.
That was as bad as anything.
Yeah.
They're all over the shop. Like, they're as crazy a team as I can actually remember. I don't remember a team making less sense over the course of this long a period.
It's like if you were trying to describe them on a piece of paper, it would be impossible. Like, it
burn it. Light.
And that would probably be the most accurate representation of what Spurs has been this season. But even you think of that, like, Liverpool game.
Yeah.
Like, the chaos almost suited Liverpool in a way because they were able to get the goals. And every so often you're like, oh my God, are Spurs actually going to pull this off? And then you're like, no, it's Spurs this season. Of course they're not going to pull it off.
But the funny thing is, their forward options are superb. Like, you know, it's like Kulusevski is playing the best he's ever played. You have Son is still Son, right? He's probably not at his height or whatever, but you'd still have him in anything.
But there's no connection
Solanke
between
that. Solanke has done well, you would
forward
say.
Forward line and no. all the rest of the
it's
team.
Just chaos. Like, and they just are so open. They've got a lot of injuries in the players that they don't want injured, I would say. You know, if you, it mightn't even be the people, the numbers versus some other teams, but they're the people you don't want gone from that
well,
team.
You want your goalkeeper, you want Romero, and you want Van de Ven 100%, as essentially, yeah. you know, the base in which you build everything from. With them missing, and we talked to John Wilson about
the goalkeeper's a joke. Like, yeah, you can't have Fraser Foster being your backup goalkeeper. Like, that's a planning issue. That's not bad luck.
Yeah.
He can't be your backup keeper if you want to play the way
they
play.
There has to be a youth goalkeeper who can play more consistent to their style than Forster.
My uncontrollable movements called TD, tardive dyskinesia, felt embarrassing. I felt like disconnecting. I asked my doctor about treating my TD and learned about Ingrezza, a prescription medicine clinically proven for reducing TD in adults. That's always one capsule, once daily, and number one prescribed. People taking Ingrezza can stay on most mental health meds.
Ingrezza can cause depression, suicidal thoughts, or actions in patients with Huntington's disease. Call your doctor if you become depressed, have sudden behavior or mood changes, or suicidal thoughts. Don't take Ingrezza if allergic. Serious side effects may include allergic reactions like sudden, potentially fatal swelling and hives, sleepiness, the most common side effect, and heart rhythm problems. Know how Ingrezza affects you before operating a car or dangerous machinery. Report fever, stiff muscles, or problems thinking, as these might be life-threatening. Shaking, stiffness, drooling, and trouble with moving or balance may occur.
Take control by asking your doctor about Ingrezza.
Learn more at Ingrezza.com. That's Ingrezza.com.
It's time to have your high-five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today and get free welcome coins you can spin for a chance at cash prizes. Visit HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
Because it's not like he's making really good saves anyway. And he's hurting them by not being able to sweep, and he's hurting them by not being able to play the ball out. And then similarly, if you've got defenders who are effectively going in to fill gaps within the defence at the moment, you can't rely on the halfway line as an extra defender, especially when there's very little pace in that defence at the moment.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say, though, in terms of the setting it all on fire and the thing is, like, we're saying I'm picking on Newcastle's form rather than Tottenham's. Spurs are still less predictable than United, say. United's kind of form. United are in that position where they're like, I can't see any good coming of it. Spurs still do have that ability to turn it on. Like, they've had big wins, and like they've hammered City, they've hammered Villa. They turn it on, and they're like, their goal difference is spectacular. They've had like loads of really big wins this year, but they're what, 11th in the table, and they're like,
I just don't think Newcastle is the sort of team that they can turn that on against, though.
No, I do agree with that.
I know what you're saying,
that,
but
yeah.
I don't think...
I'm wary of them, though. I'm always scared of Spurs, no matter how far they fall, I suppose.
But that's the whole point of, like, the burning piece of paper, because... Yeah. And, like, it goes back, and maybe in some ways, to the whole, like, Spursy cliche, but they do have the talent there. They do have the ability, as you said, that forward attacking options are brilliant. They can get goals. That's not a problem to them. It's just that whenever there's a counter-attack or whenever... they go up, you're not confident that they're going to hold on to that lead, or that they're going to hold, even if it's 1-1, that they're going to hold on. You know that in the next 5 to 10 minutes, they're probably going to concede.
Yeah.
Can't help but feel the game against Liverpool in the League Cup is possibly more important than this one.
So I don't know. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. I kind of tend to agree that, and it's funny, John disagreed that like winning a League Cup would save Ange and that it would matter all that much. I kind of feel like it would. Now, he did make a good point that Mourinho was sacked while waiting for a Wembley final by Levy, who, you know, seemingly doesn't mind that there's trophy droughts at Spurs. But at the same time, I think winning the League Cup would be a big deal, and it would be a big stepping stone to try and build something there. At the same time, though, the way it's gone this year, the way it's so strong, that you have two legs against Liverpool, who would put out a decent team, you would imagine.
You think so, yeah.
You would have to beat them over two legs and then go a final that could
probably
be against Arsenal.
Yeah.
Or like Newcastle, as we just talked about, like, are obviously a formidable foe. But if it's against Arsenal, Spurs and Arsenal, suddenly that's a huge task. I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but it's like you're looking three games down the line. So sometimes when you have a big team in a League Cup semi-final, it can feel like you're only in the quarters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not like we're not just like a game from Wembley kind of thing. Like, so I think it's a big thing for them to suddenly put their season on hold because of a League Cup run.
And the other thing is top five obviously gets the Champions League this season because of the way the English teams have been doing.
How are they going to get in the top five?
That's the thing. It feels a long way away. I know City have, what, 2 wins in 14. They're sitting sixth at the moment. So it's bizarre how
it's
the
all very tight. But you just think that there's enough teams between them that'll get some.
And could
form
you see
together.
Spurs doing a run that would get them in there? I don't know.
Okay, so we're all going for Newcastle.
It's
more
11
or less,
points to make up.
John and Nathan. From fifth, is it?
Sorry, I was thinking Champions League, but sorry.
Yeah,
to fifth,
well, fifth is likely to be Champions League with the with the coefficients.
It almost certainly is.
Tottenham are on 24 and Newcastle are 32.
Yeah, well, Chelsea's form is collapsing. There's a question mark that's going to be there until Forest hold on, as there was for Villa last year, as there was for Newcastle the year before. Until they just do it, nobody will believe it.
I don't see Forest finishing top five.
And then who have you got? Like, you got the are Fulham and all of them going to be there come the end of the season? Brighton have already fallen off. Brentford have already fallen off. You imagine Spurs will climb up the table, but
whether it's enough.
Like, you'll still have Villa, Chelsea, Forest, City, all between them.
Yeah.
And Chelsea. Okay. Right. Okay. Let's go on to City, speaking of them. They're playing West Ham. City with a rare 3 o'clock on a Saturday game. We went for this one instead of the Brighton Arsenal game. One, because I'm kind of sick of talking about Arsenal. And two is because City, they're still that intrigue. Like, I am surprised to see eight Man Cities on that table.
I was quite surprised too. Even
only
though
me and Nathan have both gone for draws. One all for him, two all for me. And everybody else has gone for a comfortable enough City win, including you, Kathleen.
Did I go 2-1?
Well, okay, yeah. City to win.
I don't think it would, like, I have 2-1 there. I don't think it'll necessarily be a confident City win. I think it'll be very similar to, like, the Leicester game and any of the victories they have had over the last while, where West Ham very much look like they could score and probably should take their chances. I just don't think they will, and I think City will manage to scrape past them. It was funny because even earlier when I was looking back on what I had submitted in my picks, and I was like, wow, I can't believe I only put 2-1 for City. I still have it in my head that they're good.
At home. To a poor West Ham team.
And then I was like, no, Kathleen, remember what they've actually done over the last couple of weeks and how they have been playing. But it's just funny how it's really hard after so long to take that out of your head. But no, I don't think this will be a confident win from them by any shape of the imagination. I don't think now that they've got that little break in their poor form that they're all of a sudden going to go on a run of form. They're not in that place at the moment at all. And it's really flipping frustrating that, you know, Arsenal haven't capitalised on that, but
Liverpool have come and been the new City. When they beat Forest in the middle of this run, it was 3-0, it was one of those ones that looked better on paper than it probably was in reality, but still, one of those ones you say, no matter how they did it, they'll kick on now. And they absolutely didn't. They were arguably worse after it. I watched the Leicester game, Will, and there is a possibility that it triggers something.
Yeah.
It triggers a kind of we're still City, we'll go out, we'll just be a little bit less eyes on us. We're 3 o'clock on a Saturday, we're at home to a poor team, we'll be okay, we'll just go out and be ourselves and we'll win. That worries me about picking the draw here. But watching the 90 minutes, Leicester, Jamie Vardy should have had a hat-trick in that game. And that's between him not staying onside when he should have and would have had the same chance if he did versus missing a sitter.
The one-on-one
there was just support, a few, like, you know, and that's Leicester.
Yeah.
They are wide open. I don't know how any team isn't going to score against them at some point. And I think back over Christmas, I think back the Spurs conversation we just had, I think back of Man United going there and beating them with Diallo, and I think back of Villa beating them at home. And it's like, I've watched every Villa game this season, and that's the most comfortable. It was 2-1, but it was a last minute goal from City. Should have been 4-5, and it was like playing, you know, routine home Saturday afternoon game against a team 15-16 in the league. That's what it felt like. And when United,
absolutely normal,
United have got up, you know, played well, probably, like, you know, could have lost the game and were lucky to win it, but that was, oh my God, what's going on at United? It was the opposition. You know, this isn't pretend, like, this is actually happening. That Leicester could have beaten them.
Yep.
Easily.
You're back.
And, you know, Everton, you know, came back, you know, every time they scored over, you know, Christmas and the couple of weeks before, they panicked. They did the same against Leicester. They score and then have no confidence to keep it going. So I just, it's almost law of probability I've gone for a high scoring draw in this game.
Yeah, like if you're backing City, you're backing them on legacy and what they've done previously.
Yeah.
So like Pep has got this remarkable record on the first fixture after New Year's. He's won all of them in the Premier League era that he's been there. But obviously City have been a lot better in pretty much every turn of the year that he's actually been in charge. I saw some positives in the performance. Obviously now Silvinho, who I thought was incredibly busy against Leicester, has finally now got a goal. So that's a weight off his shoulders. Erling Haaland had endured, by his high, very, very high standards, a miserable 13 games or so in front of goal. Against Everton in particular, Haaland was snatching at chances. He was passing away the responsibility to Foden a few times during that game when Haaland would have taken a shot earlier in the season and probably scored. Maybe it's just kicked into gear for him now that he's actually scored a goal. I thought Kevin De Bruyne looked fitter and sharper in that game and got into positions where he was more able to influence the game. But I take the point entirely that City could have conceded 2-3 goals against Leicester very, very easily indeed. So they worry you. And I'm sure there is a concern about their own confidence internally within the Manchester City camp. West Ham also very difficult to analyse at the moment. So they were pathetic against Liverpool the weekend just gone by. But it just had a 4-game run without defeat before that. And it felt like maybe they had actually just steadied the ship a little bit under Lopetegui. And then your concern would be, actually, look at the way that they played against Liverpool. So are Liverpool an anomaly, or are West Ham open to conceding goals against City at the weekend? I'm not sure.
Is the answer yes to both? Is the answer that like they started poorly against Liverpool and the game was gone from them and you're playing against the best team in the country and you give up a little bit?
Possibly.
And that's not a good sign for a team. But then again, you have Lopetegui against Guardiola and there'll be, you know, there's always that little bit of extra interest when it's the two Spanish coaches. I don't know. I don't madly trust West Ham.
No.
My pick is on City, I have to say.
And yeah.
I'd imagine you guys are both legacy picking, but I think the opposition isn't hurting you picking City either. West Ham aren't there, really. See Mikel Antonio posting on Instagram. He's on crutches.
Good
looks
to see
okay.
Him on his feet.
It was a very much a kind of a, I really realise how valuable and precious life is, and so like that. And then with the obligatory, and I will be back on the pitch very soon. Hammers.
Is that just the natural sports person's way of dealing with things? My leg has
24,
been
24. You've just crushed your leg.
Yeah, compound fracture. My beautiful car has been destroyed, but I'll be back next season.
No, fair play though. I do hope to see him. Actually, he's always been a he's one of those players I think you like to watch. You know what I mean? He's so tenacious and good. But they don't have him obviously for the rest of the season. I don't think Fulkrug. He'd got in the pre kind of like everybody is a big signing era. He would have gone down as one of those classic. You bought him off the Euros.
Off
didn't
the back of the Euros. They are West Ham. I think it's 8 points clear of the relegation zone at the moment as well. So sometimes there is a kind of maybe a slight overreaction because it's West Ham to a certain extent, but they should be obviously doing better.
There was a sense that his job was in big danger before the recent run that you mentioned before. Mm. If you go out and get hammered to Liverpool, you don't expect to pick up points necessarily. You're going to get hammered and then you go to the Etihad and put them back in form almost. Mm. If City go out and win this comfortably, I'd say he's gone. They're playing Villa in the Cup next Friday. So maybe he gets that game and then you kind of see how it goes after that.
On Lopetegui as well, I think I saw during the week, Real Madrid sacked him in fewer games than Ruben Amorim has had at Manchester United in this little run. It was being used as a kind of a ruthless idea that Real Madrid just do not accept mediocrity. So if you even have a bad 6 or 7 games, you are gone.
Yeah. But West Ham and Crystal Palace are the two teams that go that way, isn't it? Mm. How long did Frank de Boer get? 6 games?
Too long, according to Dame Delaney.
Right, let's look at our last game. It's Monday Night Football. Mm. And who would have thought at the start of the season that I would have marked off straight away? It was a choice between City and West Ham and Brighton and Arsenal. There was never a chance we weren't talking about Wolves versus Nottingham Forest on Monday Night Football. Almost everybody has gone for a Forest win here. Colm, Owen, Jer, Kathleen, Nathan, Phil and Shane. Myself and Will tied at the top of the table, let's not forget. And by tied, I mean Will's 3 points clear. We've both gone for a 1-1 draw here and so John has also gone for the same score. My logic isn't actually a knock on Forest. It is an assumption that 5-game win streaks don't come along that often and they tend not to turn into 6-game win streaks. It's just the law of big numbers, really, is that like things don't continue to go your way. Wolves have shown massive improvement. Since they got rid of
Cunha's suspended is the only.
I know, I was coming to that. Yeah, that is important. It is important. Cunha will not be playing. He's going to miss that game and the FA Cup game for an FA ban. It's a big deal. I do think though that Wolves have turned into a real team. since they got rid of fake manager Gary O'Neill and brought in a real manager. And I don't think they're getting relegated. I think they look like they're a decent mid-table team. And if they are a decent mid-table team, that's not an easy place to go and win. I think a decent result here for Forest under current form is an away point. And I wouldn't rule out them winning by an odd goal, as you guys have gone for, but I would lean towards the draw.
I just don't think we've given Forest enough credit for what they've done this season so
really
far.
Really try not to take away credit from
this. This is the thing, like, they had, 32 points last season, just survived from relegation. That's the lowest points tally ever in the Premier League history to not be relegated.
Yeah.
And now they're up there competing with, like, Arsenal, Chelsea. I know it's a bit of an anomaly of a season in that City aren't up there. But, you know, like...
But even to win five Premier League games in a row, is incredible.
You're talking about Mo Salah, Isak, you know, Haaland... Maybe he's always going to be up there.
You put some respect on Chris Wood's name.
Yeah. But he is up there, like the top four at the moment, and it's kind of mental. And I know, obviously, there's probably not a massive contingent of Nottingham Forest fans in Ireland, and you're always going to
more
slightly,
than you expect.
Yeah, but you're always going to slightly lean towards, you know, talking about the bigger teams. But what they've done this season is absolutely sensational.
That's mad.
Yeah,
and it's important to remember as well, it's not with a litany of new signings in the way they did in the previous 2 years. This is the team that was there last year, more or less. This is, you know, it's Morgan Gibbs-White, it's Alanga, it's Chris Wood, it's Hudson-Odoi, it's, you know...
You've just reeled off
Williams, whoever. But also players.
Footballers there.
Yeah. That's the whole point. Yeah. It was like their team seemed like it should have been a lot better than it was last season. And now it's outperforming where you think it was. And I have to say, like, I don't think Nuno is someone, like, obviously he was a disaster at Spurs. I'd say he was fairly well respected at Wolves without ever being thought of as, you know, I don't think people were celebrating the Spurs appointment thinking, oh, that's a smart one. I think they saw him as a mid-table guy.
I think what we saw at Forest before is that it looked like a collection of players, whereas this year it looks like a team. And, like, yes, they are definitely performing way outside of what you expected of them. But they were definitely like a high mid-table team in previous years if they were able to be brought together in the way that they have been this season.
Very decent in defence. Manilo's a very, very good player and very good leader, a very good kind of like old school organiser at the back as well that you kind of want to build your team around as well. So it's not just all the kind of sexy attacking players either.
I think, like, when it comes to two teams in particular at the moment who are probably overperforming based on their wages and their budget are Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest. So both of those teams are ridiculously well-drilled with two managers who set teams up very well defensively. And in a world in the Premier League where a lot of teams are conceding cheaply, we already talked about Spurs, these are two teams who make themselves very difficult to beat. And then when you look at Nottingham Forest, with the players that they have at the other end of the field, if they are going to be solid and they can move the ball quickly forward, Wood is kind of a freakish finisher. He has scored, like if you looked at his DVD of the year, such a range of goals that he scored. I think of the one that he scored against Everton a few weeks ago, which you're just not expecting. It's an incredibly low percentage shot, and yet he scores. And he seems to always be there for headers against teams as well. You add in the quality of those technical players that you've just reeled off as well, Mick. Like Nottingham Forest carry a serious threat in the break, and you're Elanga. You were thinking he left Manchester United where he felt he didn't really get a chance. I think he's 11 points ahead of them in the table at the moment. So they've been really good at acquiring players who maybe weren't valued at the other clubs that they were at in the way they should have been.
I think they're very decent. I think you said earlier you didn't think they were going to hang on for a Champions League spot. I think you can give them plenty of respect and still say that they've been out achieving their talent level at the moment. And I have to say, when I've watched them, I thought they've been tenacious and... they've been match winners. Say the game against Villa where Duran, you know, Villa were fairly in control of that game. And what I admired about Forest was they were very, very hard to break down. It was at the City Ground, but they played quite defensively and they had an unbelievably good structure that was hard to break down. And there was I was saying, if Villa score, they could win this by two or three because things will open up and they'll play into their hands. And what happened instead was Villa did score. And Forest completely changed and they pressurised, they put so much pressure on and it just became this inevitable game-chasing performance and they got two instead of one. Now, what I will say is most of the times you'll only get the one. And I do worry that when against, I think things will even out over the course of the year where, you know, these performances will only be good enough for draws or for losses and that will just happen over time. And I think that they'll do well, they continue to play well, they should keep their confidence up. and they could qualify for Europe. I just don't see them in this sort of like insane title running form lasting for long. I don't think they're actually good enough. I don't think they're that far ahead of the teams that they're playing.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
To be fair, I just think that while they're in this position, they should be given the credit for what they've
100%.
Done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because it's been, it's been one of the most fun recent seasons, I think, just for the fact that every week it's impossible to judge who is going to perform well. And I know Liverpool are running away with the actual title, but the rest of it is very, very entertaining.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you say it's hard to judge, unless you're Will O'Callaghan. That's who you got this week. Let's see the table one more time. 46 points. No, the overall table, if we could.
As the philosopher Kendrick Lamar once said, Michael, you know, stay humble, which is where I'm staying at the actual half point of the season. Assuming that we're not going to roll this into the Club World Cup and be like every single player.
We'll end it at the end of the Premier League and then see how we go. But yeah, Will's on 46 points at the halfway stage. I'm on 43. We've got John and Nathan on 41, but not in great form. Owen got 0 points last week, so he's on 38. Kathleen up to 36 with a brilliant Christmas, putting herself into contention. Shane's on 34. Jer also with 0 points. His wacky predictions have slumped him into joint second last.
Is this
Phil.
The point where Jer starts going 0-0 in every fixture, and like 5-0, and just starts to try and game us here?
Look at this. Talk about Notts Forest coming up from almost getting relegated to almost winning the league. Colm Bouygues, 30 points, bottom of the table, last year's champion. He's doing a Leeds 91, 92, 93 here.
He's lost the baby bounce. He had that last year. You know, the golfers always get the little baby bounce. His is gone.
Very much so. He'll have to have another baby. Okay, that's who you got. We'll see you next week.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
My uncontrollable movements called TD, tardive dyskinesia, felt embarrassing. I felt like disconnecting. I asked my doctor about treating my TD and learned about Ingrezza, a prescription medicine clinically proven for reducing TD in adults. That's always one capsule, once daily, and number one prescribed. People taking Ingrezza can stay on most mental health meds.
Ingrezza can cause depression, suicidal thoughts, or actions in patients with Huntington's disease. Call your doctor if you become depressed, have sudden behavior or mood changes, or suicidal thoughts. Don't take Ingrezza if allergic. Serious side effects may include allergic reactions like sudden, potentially fatal swelling and hives, sleepiness, the most common side effect, and heart rhythm problems. Know how Ingrezza affects you before operating a car or dangerous machinery. Report fever, stiff muscles, or problems thinking, as these might be life-threatening. Shaking, stiffness, drooling, and trouble with moving or balance may occur.
Take control by asking your doctor about Ingrezza.
Learn more at Ingrezza.com. That's Ingrezza.com.